This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric. Do you have a plumbing emergency? Call Four Seasons. An electrical emergency? Call Four Seasons. A heating or cooling emergency? Call Four Seasons. Same day hot water tank installation needed? Call Four Seasons. Need a whole home generator? Call Four Seasons. We guarantee same day installation on all heating, cooling, plumbing, and electrical needs. And no extra charge for nights, weekends, or holidays.
For all the right reasons, call 864 Seasons.
Chicago winters can be brutal. Snow, ice, freezing temps. If you're thinking, driving in this weather, I need a new Chevy, you're not alone. The right vehicle makes all the difference when it comes to safety, confidence, and comfort on the road. You saw the Chevy lineup at the auto show. Now it's time to take the next step. Need the power and durability of a Silverado, the all-weather confidence of an Equinox or Blazer, the spacious comfort of a Traverse, Tahoe, or Suburban, or the sporty, city-friendly Trax, perfect for navigating winter streets? Your local Chevy dealer has exactly what you need to handle winter like a pro. Don't wait. Head to ChevyDriveChicago.com today. Browse the newest models, special offers, locate your nearest dealer, and start shopping online. Winter roads demand a vehicle you can trust. Find yours now at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Welcome in. It is overtime on 106.7 The Fan. Toby Altizer with you till 10 o'clock tonight. If you'd like to hop in at any point during the show, feel free. 800-636-1067. The MGM National Harbor listener lines are open. You can also tweet at me at Toby_Altizer at any point during the show. So we got plenty we're going to get into. Coming up at 7 o'clock, I want to take a look at Pro Football Focus's top 101 players from this past season. Get into where some of the Commanders are on that list. Maybe there was a snub or two. Also some a little gripes I have about the list. We'll get into that coming up at 7 o'clock. Also want to take a look at sports memorabilia. I saw something cool that A.J. Brown has done with some of his jersey and the uniform that he wore in the Super Bowl. So we'll talk about that coming up at during the 7 o'clock hour. At 8 o'clock, want to talk about the NBA. We're going to dive into all the sports tonight. All four major U.S. sports, we're hitting them tonight. 8 o'clock, want to talk about the NBA. There was a trainer that was on, I believe it's Kevin O'Connor's podcast, and he was complaining about the fans. Want to talk about that and also take a look at, I was watching Court of Gold. I don't know if you checked this out yet on Netflix, where it followed the Olympics, and I thought it was really, really good. There were a couple takeaways I had from it, some of the guys that you kind of like a little bit more after watching that. But who's going to take the mantle from LeBron and Steph? So we'll talk about that coming up at 8 o'clock. In the 9 o'clock hour, we'll get back into baseball. You just heard Grant and Danny talking about the automatic balls and strike system. What's your take on that? We'll talk about that at 9 o'clock, as well as taking a look at a stock report that ESPN put together about Major League Baseball. Where do the Nats fall, and who's going to make the difference in the 2025 season? We know about the big-time guys like James Wood, Mackenzie Gore, but who are some other names that if the Nationals are going to be successful this season and they're potentially going to win 80-plus games and maybe even sneak into the wild card, who are the guys that are going to make the difference in that outside of the stars that we know have to produce? So we'll talk about that coming up at 9 o'clock. But we got to start with the biggest sports story from yesterday, which unfortunately did not go the U.S.'s way. It kind of felt like, for me, I almost wanted to acknowledge this like the Super Bowl, or I just don't acknowledge it. we're like, yeah, it just didn't happen. Like, the, you know what? This tournament didn't matter anyways. It was kind of pointless. Who cares anyways? But you got to give credit to Canada. It was a heck of a game. It lived up to the billing. And the thing that I want to dive off of this before, you know, we get move on to some football is last night there was an average of 9.3 million viewers for this game with a peak of 10.4. That's incredible. Absolutely incredible. It's the most viewed event on ESPN platforms since the 2024 NBA Finals, obviously excluding the NFL and college football because those are obviously going to be the biggest. It's the most viewed non-NFL event ever on ESPN+. I mean, this is something that really captured a lot of people that are not hockey fans. They were tuned in to see this thing, and you wonder if that's going to give them the bump. But first, looking at this game last night, Vic, it was really well played. I think the really enticing thing about a tournament like this, obviously best on best, you get really high-quality hockey. And I think that was the cool part about this, is not only did you get players bought in, because it's one thing to get players bought in, and then you get a game like Super Bowl 59 that just never is close, right? This was players bought in. You heard him talking about it all night on ESPN. Teams evenly matched. It was one of those things, if you played it 10 times, USA wins 5, Canada wins 5. It's about as evenly matched a matchup as you could possibly get, because even though the U.S. won 3-1 in Montreal, one of those is late, and that's, what was it, an empty netter, right? So it's really like a 2-1 game. Both games were really, really close the entire way. Last night was close. You have real chances for Austin Matthews at the end. Jordan Binnington was incredible for Canada, as much as I don't want to give them credits. They were incredible. And then the one dude that you can't leave on the ice somehow finds himself wide open right in front of the net, and Connor McDavid, and they find him, and he buries it. And that's the difference in the ball game. Their star was able to take advantage of the chance, and Hellebuck couldn't stand on his head like Binnington was. And it was a really fun game to watch. Obviously, I wish it would have gone the other way. Maybe you'd like to flip the roles, and you could have had them win in Canada and U.S. win in the U.S. for the championship game. But it was a fun game to watch, and I think it was a really, really good night for hockey.
Absolutely. I mean, that felt like watching the Olympics. That was like a precursor to the 2026 Winter Olympics. And you were invested into it. I was invested in it. Initially, like 2 weeks ago, not knowing how this tournament was going to play out, I was not caring about it. Like Chris Russell said a couple days ago, or a couple weeks ago, whatever it was. But now, when you see the players actually invest, go 110%, I'm just curious how that went down. Like, I wonder if the players talked to each other like, hey, guys, we're going full tilt here. We're treating this like it's a playoff game. And you're like, all right, we're down. Or did they just feel it as the puck? Like, I'm just curious how that went.
Well, and I think it's something where you throw on the country's jersey, and certain sports feel that a little bit more than others. And hockey definitely feels that, right? Like, I think, you know, watching some of the different things, like this Summer Olympics this past year, the basketball players felt it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I think if you were able to capture some of that, maybe you could end up with something like that in NBA All-Star Weekend or something. But there's just something about hockey players. Whenever they throw on the U.S. flag, whenever they throw on the Canadian flag, specifically those two countries playing against each other, obviously you can throw in the other countries of Sweden and Finland. I think Russia feels the same way when they're allowed to play in these things, and you've got other countries as well. But it's just something about that sport where I think P.K. Subban did a good job of laying this out too. I think you can say this about football in some ways. Obviously, there's no international aspect of football. But in sports that are that physical, that are that demanding on your body, if you don't go out there with the intention of playing 100% and being the aggressor, the chances are you're going to get hurt. Like, if you want to play on your back foot, you're the dude that's going to get plastered up against the boards, and you're going to feel it. And so I think both sides understanding that you can't play passively if the other team's going to play aggressively.
But we've seen that in the prior All-Star games, well, where you can go 25-30% and the score ends up being like 20-19 because no one's playing defense or even trying.
And I think that's the difference right there. And an All-Star game, you're proud of playing for the Eastern Conference? Not really.
So yeah, if they had an East-West jersey, we're not watching the same product Correct. Like we did yesterday.
Correct. But I think as soon as you throw on that country flag, it adds that passion, and you understand that if you're the United States and you're in the dressing room and you know Canada's on the other side, that gives you a little bit of, oh man, we're playing Canada. But even if you didn't feel that, you know that Canada's feeling that back your way. So if you come out and you want to play 25%, but they're going 100, you're going to get smoked, not only on the scoreboard, but you're going to feel it. And so I think what happens when you get it, and this is something that they talked about for the NBA All-Star game, because I think it, you know, you see the parallels where the NBA All-Star game was pointless. No one cared. And this, everyone's dialed into, and they're different formats. I get that. But you have to have people trying. The NBA hasn't had people trying the All-Star game in years, whereas for this one, you could see right away people are blocking shots, people are hitting people, they're finishing checks. It wasn't something where, you know, there's ways to play where it's higher intensity than, like you're saying, in an All-Star game where you're giving 25%, but it's not a full 100% where you're not finishing the checks all the way. It's similar in some ways to sometimes how, you know, you get these padded practices in football and stuff like that where it's you're wrapping up, but you're not fully taken to the ground and different ways like that. They could have maybe played at that level, but they didn't. They played full bore to the point that Matthew Tkachuk is hurt and he's still trying to get out there. We saw last year in the Stanley Cup final, he had a fractured sternum. He's still out there playing. I don't know exactly what the injury was he was dealing with last night, but he's still trying to get on the ice.
I heard Brady Tkachuk during one of the intermissions. I think it was the second, might have been the first or second intermission interview where he's like, I think he was like a little bit under the weather. And they asked him, like, you know, were you good to go? He's like, I'm not missing this game. There's no chance I'm missing this game. Like, can you believe that? It's not even a regular season game. This technically doesn't mean anything in a way, but he's like, I'm not going to miss this for the world.
Well, and I'm going to say this name. I don't want to have people turn the radio off, but Sidney Crosby, even after talking with the interviewer, did a really good job kind of laying out, like, it's just special to play for your country.
Yeah.
It's just special to play with those guys, and it was really cool to see the intensity that was brought. And I think this is really good for hockey because I'm a casual hockey fan. I am. I watch Caps games and not much else. But getting the opportunity to see guys in their best light, where Connor McDavid, every time he touched the puck, if you're an American, you're like, uh-oh, that dude gets going. And you know how many times I've watched Connor McDavid in my life? Not very many. So I know about the name, but I haven't gotten to see him. And seeing those guys, it's really cool because it's on that stage. Now, you know, if an Oilers game's on ESPN late at night one night, well, I might tune in and watch.
So you're going to watch Oilers and Senators. You know, you got Connor McDavid on the Oilers. You got Brady Tkachuk on the Senators. Are you tuning in 7 o'clock on Hulu, ESPN Plus?
Yeah, I might. I might turn it on. If it's on TV, like I'm not going to suddenly become a diehard where, you know, like I have MLB TV and I'm watching the Seattle Mariners at 10 o'clock at night. I'm watching Joe Davis call the Dodgers. I don't know that I'm going to be that guy. You know, I'm not suddenly signing up for whatever the NHL's package is so I can watch all these things. But if it's on TNT or if it's on ESPN, I'm more likely to tune in now than I was before. Like G&D brought up earlier, you know who's in town Sunday afternoon? Connor McDavid and the Oilers. If I'm a Caps fan, I'm buying a ticket so that I can personally boo Connor McDavid.
Like, yeah. Do you think he gets booed?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Why not?
All right.
In the nation's capital?
Now imagine that. You know how awkward this must have been for Boston fans with Brad Marchand on Team Canada?
I'm glad he wasn't the one to bury the final
goal. Right, but I'm just curious, how's that going to go, you know, if he had scored the game winner? Like, I'm wondering from our perspective, we had no Washington Capitals in this event. To us, this was like a bye week. As fans, as for the team, where you don't have to worry about the Capitals, our players, getting hurt, you know, or representing Team Canada in this instance,
sure.
Like Tom Wilson. You know, if Tom Wilson went out there and buried the game winner to win it for Team Canada, how would you react? Would you be upset? Would you be like, heck yeah? Like, I'm just curious, how would that have gone?
You'd feel weird. I'm glad we weren't in that spot, because if it was Tom Wilson who buried the game winner,
Logan Thompson and net, you know, could you imagine?
I don't even know how I'd feel, because you'd be happy that it's Tom Wilson, but I don't know, man. You're on the imposing team for that night. So I think it's a cool scenario, and it's interesting where the Capitals are second in the National Hockey League in points, and no one was taking part in this tournament. And you're right, it's almost like a bye week where it's a little different, because you're probably, if you're an NFL fan, you're going to tune in anyways, regardless. I think a lot of hockey fans, or casual fans, probably were thinking, it's no Caps players are playing. I'm probably not going to tune in. But suddenly, when you see some of the USA-Canada action happening, you tune in. But it is a lot like it, where when there's a bye week for the Commanders, you're watching football and it's like the most relaxing thing ever. Whereas this was a little more intense because it's USA Canada, but I wasn't worried that John Carlson's going to get hurt. I wasn't worried that Tom Wilson's getting in scuffles all over the ice. I wasn't worried about Logan Thompson. I wasn't worried about any of that. I was able to enjoy it. I think it was a little bit different because of that.
Yeah. I mean, Boston fans, they lost Charlie McAvoy, one of their best defenders. They lost him in this tournament. So as exciting as it was to watch him in the event, and now he's not playing for Boston now, moving forward. So it's one of those things where, you know, next year, you know, I'm pretty sure Tom Wilson will most likely be on Team Canada. You know, how would we react as Caps fans watching the event? Well, does it even stay Four Nations? Do they up it to five, six? Because I think it's a crime that not Alex Ovechkin's not even participating in such an event.
Well, and obviously the stuff with Russia, if that's resolved in some time, I think Russia's a part of it.
The Czech Republic.
Yeah, I think they would want to have maybe an eight-team tournament, right? So you get a lot of guys involved. Because frankly, you know, you've got a lot of big names in the Four Nations that competed. You also got a lot of big names that didn't compete, right?
Correct.
So you could even capitalize even more. But yeah, I think this is something that's really cool that they've capitalized on.
But the only reason why I think this event was successful, and let's be honest, is because USA and Canada were the two teams in the championship. Because if it's Finland versus Sweden, I don't think anyone's watching this.
No, I didn't watch I didn't watch any games that didn't involve the U.S.
Right, so it's one of those things where do we just want to just get right to it and just make this Team USA, Team Canada, make it a best of five kind of deal?
Yeah,
I think that would be more interesting, having a best of five between those teams.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's tough because I think when you throw in some other nations, maybe you could get a little more intrigue with some of these things. But you're right. I mean, they capitalized on USA, Canada. The game in Montreal just built up such high expectations for the game last night, and it lived up to it in terms of how they played on the ice. The thing that I think is going to be difficult is, you're right, injury-wise and some of these things, where if one of my players gets hurt in the Olympics, like, I can't get mad that you wanted to play for your country in the Olympics. That's so prestigious. That's something that only comes around every 4 years. But if you get hurt in some random tournament that, heck, no one even knew what the Four Nations face-off trophy looked
like.
This is
essentially the NBA Cup.
Yeah, this is the NBA Cup with some countries where no one knew what the trophy looked like. No one even knew like what the ceremony was going to be like. No one even knew going into the tournament if anyone's going to take this seriously. So I don't know that if you're coming out of this and John Carlson is going to miss 2 months, I'd feel a little bit differently about this. Hopefully the guys that were a little bit dinged up in this aren't majorly hurt, but I think that's the difficult part of it. Because it's such a physical game, players are always going to play, because I think that's just more so the hockey mindset. Then maybe in the old days with basketball and some of these other sports, maybe in the old days you could have got some of that. I just don't think that's the mindset of some of the players nowadays. It's still the mindset for hockey players that if they're going to suit up outside of an all-star game environment like that, right, they're going to play hard. It's just tough, because if you were to lose one of your guys and they're going to be out for months, suddenly I'm not a big fan of the Four Nations.
Just ask the Bruins.
It's tough. It's tough. So I don't know exactly what the right way to do it is, but I'll tell you this. The NHL has found something that is really successful. I know some people are looking at, I'll run this every year. No, you can't do it every year. It's something that, you know, part of the beauty and part of the reason you like this so much is a little bit of a novelty, something that you don't get all the time. And if you can maybe alternate this every other year with the Olympics, and you've got the Olympics every four, you've got the, you know, in between, you've got the All-Star Game, then the Four Nations or whatever you're going to turn it into, and then the All-Star Game, and then back to the Olympics. So that way you're getting international All-Star Game. And I know the All-Star Game's never going to live up to it, but I think if you want to try to force this down their throats too much, it's just going to become the same old hack. So I think having it as a little bit special is cool, but I'm interested to see how they build off of this, and how much of a bump do you think this gives hockey? Like I said, the number of viewers that they got last night was 9.3 million people. And I know it's U.S., Canada, and like you laid out perfectly, I don't know that they do as well if it's United States, Finland, or U.S., Sweden, or Canada and any of those. I don't think you get those numbers. But watching that last night, I think more people are going to tune in to see Connor McDavid. I think more people are going to tune in to see Jacob Slavin was a star last night. I don't think more people maybe want to see Austin Matthews. More people want to see, you know, whoever, Brady Tkachuk or either of the Tkachuks, right? maybe they get a bump. Do you think it gives them a big bump, or do you think it's going to go back to it was USA Canada, it was a one-time thing, everyone got fired up, and then it's going to go back to the same old, same
old? It's going to go back to the status quo, because let's be honest, like when after the Olympics, you know, when you're watching, did the NHL players participate in the Winter Olympics?
Not this past time, no.
But back then, when they were participating, did the numbers change? I don't think so.
No, but I think they did a really good job, too, for this, that the ratings for next year's Olympics and the hockey in next year's Olympics are going to be through the roof.
That is absolutely correct.
People are going to be so fired up about this, and I think you're going to get motivation from the nations that weren't in the four nations. Obviously, you're going to have USA, Canada, Sweden, and Finland, big-time nations that are going to care. Russia, I think, I'm not sure. Are they allowed to participate in the Olympics? I think. If they're going to participate,
yeah.
I'd be a little motivated if I'm Russia. If you're one of these other countries, Germany or someone else, that I'm going to be a little bit motivated that I wasn't a part of this tournament, that everybody's talking about, oh, this was great for hockey. And you're like, I didn't even play. What the heck? I didn't even get a chance to play. So I'm excited for next year's Olympic tournament. This was a really, really good precursor to that.
I know they sold a lot. Or they might have gotten more subscriptions for Disney Plus to watch the movie Miracle now.
That's true.
I mean, did you watch the beginning where they were with the Kurt Russell?
I know. I did want to watch Miracle.
Made me want to watch the movie.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let's move on to talk some football. Pro Football Focus ranked its top 101 players for this past season. There were three Commanders on the list. Should there have been more? And where do the Commanders fall on this list? I'll give you that all next here on The Fan.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not so secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ah, can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. It is overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you till 10 o'clock tonight. Pro Football Focus recently put out their top 101 players from the 2024 NFL season. They just finished up releasing the top 10 players today. Some interesting guys up at the top of the list that I have a little bit of a gripe with, and we'll get into that in just a little bit. Want to start with the Commanders, though, and there's three players on this list, and I want to get Vic's thoughts on this. Just curious to see where he thinks these guys would fall. There's three guys on this list. I think I would make an argument for four guys to be on this list. But I'm curious, Vic, there's three guys. Where do you think, or who do you think is on the list, and where do you think they rank? So this is going off of everybody in the National Football League this past season. Where do you think the Commanders rank some of their big-time players?
Like, who in particular?
I mean, Jaden, obviously.
Like, I would think Jaden's got to be top five.
Okay, so where would you, if you're guessing. So there's three guys on the list. You take your guess of who they are and where they rank in the top 101.
I'll go Jaden number five.
Okay. How about
Terry McLaurin will probably be, what, 50?
Okay.
And is it a defender?
It is a defensive guy.
Bobby Wagner at 99.
Okay. So Vic is going with Jaden at five. Yeah. He's going with Bobby Wagner at 99, and he's going with Terry McLaurin at 50. Now, you nailed the three guys.
Really? All right.
The three guys are correct.
All right.
Terry McLaurin is the lowest ranked commander on the list at 66.
Oh,
he's at 66 and says McLaurin clearly liked Jaden Daniels throwing him the football as he racked up 1,300 yards and 16 touchdowns, including the postseason. His 88.4 receiving grade is his best since 2019 and places him 14th among qualified wide receivers. McLaurin was also one of just five qualified wide receivers who finished with a perfect 99.9 deep receiving grade. So maybe you'd like to see him a little bit higher if you're looking at where he's in the range of some of the players around him at 66. Again, I don't know how much you put into these lists, but Christian Benford was 67, the nickel corner for the Buffalo Bills. Alex Highsmith was 65 for Pittsburgh. Landon Dickerson, 64. Baker Mayfield at 63. So, I'm fine with where he's at. At least he's on the list. I don't know that I would like him to be a little bit higher, but I think it's fine where he's at. Next is Bobby Wagner at 41. And it says, an ageless wonder, Wagner makes the PFF 101 for the eighth time in his career, served as the veteran leader for a Commanders team that made a Cinderella run to the NFC Championship game. He had an 88.3 Pro Football Focus grade during his first year in Washington, was third among all linebackers in the NFL, led all linebackers in pass rush grade, 90.9, while placing second in run defense grade, 91.2. Wagner is one of the 10 greatest linebackers ever played the game, is once again a free agent this offseason. We'll dive into that in just a second because I think that's a huge thing. You said Jaden Daniels is number five.
Yeah.
Let's look at their top five of who they have, the top five players in the National Football League this season. Number one is Lamar Jackson. Number two is Myles Garrett. Number three is Jordan Mailata. Number four is Joe Burrow. And number five is Derrick Henry. In order to find Jaden Daniels, you have to scroll a little bit and you get to 20. Jaden Daniels, according to Pro Football Focus, is the 20th best National Football League player this past season. He says, leading the Commanders to the NFC Championship game, Daniels delivered a stellar rookie season, earning a 90.6 overall grade, fifth among qualified quarterbacks and placing him among the best rookie passers of the PFF era. He led the NFL with a 1.5% turnover-worthy play rate, was the most elusive quarterback in the league, forcing 52 missed tackles as a runner. While Washington must add more support around him to compete for a championship, Daniels was everything they could have hoped for in his debut season. Any issues with the guys and where they ranked, Vic? I think
it was number two.
I think this was about fair. Number two in the league was Myles Garrett.
See, right there, I would put Josh Allen. Because I think Lamar and Josh Allen were pretty much the same as far as...
I want to get into that in a second. We'll get into that. But any issue with the Commanders players, where they were?
Where was McLaurin?
So you had 66 for Terry, 41 for Bobby, and 20 for Jaden Daniels.
I guess I have no issues because I was kind of close-ish with McLaurin. I was wrong on Wagner, but... Yeah, I have no issues. Maybe Daniel's a little bit higher. I think he should be at least in the top 10. Maybe I'm being biased.
No, I think you're about right. I mean, if you want to include him, I mean, there's not many quarterbacks I would take over Jaden this past season, frankly.
Right.
I mean, I think they said he ranked fifth. I think, what would you say, Lamar? I think Burrow. I think Josh Allen.
And then I go.
That might be it.
Maybe Mahomes, but well.
But Mahomes wasn't really asked to do much this season.
Yeah, I agree. So, yeah.
So, here's the thing that I think is a difficult one for a lot of people to kind of parse here. When you think about what Jaden did this past season, when it goes on just this past season, we're not taking into account anything else, I think he's easily top five. and there's guys that like Patrick Mahomes and some of those that you would take him over, understanding that you're going off the one season. I'm not saying he's better than Mahomes. Mahomes obviously was coming off back-to-back Super Bowls, right? I'm not saying he's better than some of these guys. But when you're looking at some of the dudes and how they played this season, regardless of what their history is, because Jaden can't have that history, it's his rookie season, there's not many dudes you take over him. The one guy that I would have a gripe about, and now looking at some of his grades from Pro Football Focus, maybe looks a little bit, maybe understand it a little bit more, is Frankie Louvu. I thought he was an impactful player. I'm not saying that he should have been, you know, near the top of the list, but I thought, you know, 101 best players in the National Football League this year. He was a second-team All-Pro. I think, you know, PFF does this bit where sometimes I get a little frustrated with it, but they stick to their guns. They're going to go off their grades. They're not going to worry about what the AP says in terms of who wins awards and different things. Obviously, Lamar was the number one player on their list, and Josh Allen won MVP. So, you know, there's going to be some discussion there. But Frankie Louvu, I thought, maybe deserves some consideration to be in this list because of how good he was and the impact that he has. And the reason, I guess, that he's not, you look at the grades that they have for him overall, 67.5 on the season, which is 72nd among 189 linebackers. He's 21st in pass rush grade, 101st in run defense grade, and 67th in coverage grade. Which, look, I think you kind of understand who Frankie Louvu was when you brought him in. For him to be ranked 21st among pass rushing linebackers, that's kind of what he is. He can do a little bit of everything, but if you're trying to be at your best defensively, you're not asking Frankie Louvu to drop into coverage 90% of the time. He's going to be used as that chess piece to blitz. Look, doesn't really matter where he ranks on this list. This list ultimately really doesn't matter all that much. But I think the impact that he had this season, I don't know that these numbers fully reflect the impact that he had because he's such a versatile player. And one thing that I like about what this coaching staff understands that the previous one did not is they would get guys previously and they talk about positional flex, right? They talked about it all the time. How infuriating was it when you're watching some of these guys and they're talking about, but he can play corner and he can play safety and he can do a little bit of everything. Oh, this guy can play linebacker. He can do this. He can do that. He can do this. He can do that. And they talked about how versatile all these people they were bringing in were. And then they had no idea how to use these guys. No idea. I think what they did a good job this year with this staff is they brought in guys like a Frankie Louvu to me as a chess piece. Is he a great guy in pass coverage? Not really. But he's going to play off the ball linebacker. You're not going to line him up just at edge all the time. He's primarily going to rush the passer. He's one of those guys that you have to have a true plan for, or you're going to get a guy that's a lot better football player than he's going to look like on the field. What they understand is he's one of those fringe guys that can do a little bit of everything, but is you know, his specialty is rushing the passer. And what do? They asked him to rush. They moved him around. They didn't try to make him do something that he's not good at. I think you saw that on the flip side, where Quan Martin, when he was drafted by Ron Rivera and company, he was talked about, ooh, he could be their nickel guy, or he could play deep safety, or he could play down in the box a little bit. And what they did with this guy is they said, you know what, you're a free safety. And talking with him when I was filling in for B. Mitch one time with JP during the season, he talked about how much faster he could play. He kind of understood his role a little bit better and how he was able to do the things that he was able to do. And yes, they can still use him in different ways, but they understood, let's play to his strengths and allow him to play fast. I think the thing that this coaching staff did a really good job of is playing to guys' strengths. And so bringing a guy like Frankie Louvu, if he would have been brought in under Ron, he would have been useless. He would have been pointless. He would have been someone that you'd be like, why the heck did they bring this guy in? But under Dan Quinn and Joe Witt having a vision for him, I think he was really successful this year. So I would have liked to have seen him on this list, but he obviously didn't make it. But I think for Washington fans, don't feel bad. That guy's well-loved. Second-team All-Pro, absolutely deserved it. Now, there are some issues I have with this list. At the top of it, there are some issues I have with ways that they have players ranked, and some of this is going to be off of their PFF grades, which aren't always going to match exactly what you like. But we'll talk about it next, because I think there are a couple things that maybe we need to tweak on this list, maybe going forward, but heck, they're not going to listen to me. But I think there are some things that should be tweaked or little little gripes that I have about this list. We'll talk about it next here on The Fan. Welcome back. It is overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you until 10 o'clock tonight. Watching the Wiz and the Bucks play tonight, how weird do you think it is? It just kind of dawned on me. You know, when you play basketball, you know, I played a little bit in high school, whatnot. You get close with your teammates and whatnot. How crazy is it that Kuzma just a couple of weeks ago is hanging out with all these guys, and now Kuzma's on the other side. Chris Middleton has been in Milwaukee for forever, and now he's on the other side, and they're playing each other tonight. How weird do you think that feels?
That's extremely weird. It gives me the vibes of Gio Gonzalez when he was traded, when he was with the Nats and got traded to the Brewers, and all he had to do was walk across the hallway to the visiting clubhouse. That was extremely weird.
Yeah, I mean, it's just got to be such a weird feeling where, I mean, even just as a dude, not even worrying about like the chemistry of playing on the team and all these things, it's just got to be extremely weird when you're with these dudes every day. Literally every day, practice, hanging out in the locker room, games, and then next thing you know, you're gone, and then you're on the other side. You know all their tendencies, you know all these different things, but how weird does that feel just as a guy? I mean, it's got to be an interesting feeling.
Like Kuzma probably was walking in the home entrance, you know, probably. Yeah, I mean, he knows everybody, and he's like, oh, no, you're supposed to take a right, Kyle, not left.
Even if he walked into the Wizards locker room, how long would it take before Coach Keefe was like, oh, yeah, you're not even on our team, get out.
Like, exactly.
It'd just be a weird circumstance.
Coach Keefe, I already know the game plan, Coach. I already know. You know, what are you trying to hide?
Well, I mean, let's be real. The game plan is give the ball to the young kids and give it to Poole. Taking a look at the PFF top 101 players from this past season. And there's a couple gripes I have. Number one, the big issue that I have with this list, I pointed this out yesterday when we were talking about this before G&D. The defensive player of the year was Patrick Surtain II. Really, really good this season. Obviously to win that award. He's player number 12 on this list. I don't know, man. Defensive player of the year might be deserve to be a little bit higher. Again, PFF kind of does their own thing where they are taking their grades. They're not taking into consideration how the AP votes and all those things. No one was frustrated that Pat Surtain won defensive player of the year, and he's ranked 12th on this list. Regardless, the other gripe I have that I have like a real beef with, because the other one I can sort of understand, is Saquon is 10th on this list, and Derrick Henry is 5th. I don't understand how anyone was better than Saquon at running back this year. There just wasn't, right? Like, I mean, Saquon was so good this season, and he's so likable, by the way. It's like the most frustrating part about this is you've got a guy in Philadelphia. Even when he was in New York, obviously you didn't feel like you had a lot of animosity because he was so likable. But then he goes to Philly and you're like, ooh, maybe they can rub off on him so I can not like this guy. And he's still like the most likable dude. When they post that video, I don't have kids. I don't have a wife and kids like he does. But when they post the video of his daughter saying, hey, daddy, hope you do well in the game and all that. Man, if that doesn't bring a tear to your eye, and I don't even have a kid. I don't even know what that feels like. And Saquon's got all this. He's such a good guy at the parade route. He's walking down and high-fiving everybody, and he sees the ball boy for the team, and he's like, what are you doing on that side of the fence? Get over here. He pulls him up over the fence. By the way, you sleep on the fact that this is a regular-sized guy, probably weighs, what, 160, 170, like a normal-sized dude, and Saquon just lifts him over the railing like you're picking up your kid to do the Simba thing that they do at stadiums when you're trying to do the Lion King thing. Just lifts him up. Regular size dude just lifts him, no problem. But he's so darn likable. It drives me nuts. There should be no one on Philadelphia that I'd be like, you know what, I don't mind that guy. But Saquon is that guy. How is he 10th on this list, though?
Yeah, that's robbery. I mean, by default, I think he should be also potentially in the top five.
Yeah, I mean, if you had to, let's come up with our top five, Vic. If you had to come up with your own top five players this season, the National Football League, let's not even worry about the semantics of the order. Top five players in the National Football League this past season. So just again, to give you their top five, Their top five was Derrick Henry, Joe Burrow, Jordan Mailata, Myles Garrett, and Lamar Jackson going 5-1. I think Lamar deserves to be in there. I think Josh Allen is in there. I think Saquon is in there.
Burrow?
Yeah, maybe you can make the case for Burrow. To me, if you win Defensive Player of the Year, you're in there, right? Pat Surtain was the best corner in the league this year. And if you maybe want to throw in like an edge rusher, or if you want to throw in Burrow, if you want to throw in Myles Garrett, you want to throw in Chris Jones or someone like that, I wouldn't have an issue. The fact that he's 10th is just a little bit wild to me. And I get that they're going to do some of their grading and stuff. This to me is sometimes a little bit of the issue with some of these analytics and numbers and things. And I get it. They're trying to make it, you know, because when we're arguing stuff and we're presenting stuff, the best way to do it is with numbers and graphs and charts and all these things. And so they do a good job of that, right? Like they give you ways so that you can argue for this and against that and all these things. But sometimes it's just as simple as, what'd you see? Like, what'd you look at? I know that's not quantifiable.
Do they grade Saquon's hurdle ability?
I've never seen anyone hurdle a guy backwards. For that alone, he should be in the top five. Not even like, oh, a guy was like on the ground, then he jumped over him back. Like, full on hurdle the dude backwards. I mean, it's just insane what he was able to do this season. So I think those are the little bits of gripes that I would have about this list. But, you know, I think overall, just looking at some of the other guys that you could maybe have a little issue with, like Jamar Chase, this one's a little bit wild to me. Jamar Chase won the Triple Crown this year, leading the league in receptions, touchdowns, and receiving yards, and is 21st. He's behind Jaden. Love Jaden. I mean, this dude's doing something that not many people have done in the National Football League. Both of those guys. Maybe you want to have both of them a little higher. Kirby Joseph is ahead of both of them. Cam Hayward is 17th. Bijan Robinson is 15th. I don't know. I mean, we could nitpick this all day. I don't necessarily always love these sorts of lists. I think they're fun fodder and things to look at, and they give you kind of an appreciation for how other people outside of DC are feeling about these guys. But I would have loved to have seen Frankie Louvu on this list. Seeing Terry at 66, I'm totally fine with. Seeing Wagner at 41, I think is big. And this one, you know, G&D was discussing this earlier today. Would you rather bring back Ertz? Would you rather bring back Wagner? To me, it's got to be Wagner. Because I think when you look at what Bobby did this season, even if he takes a little bit of a step back, I feel good about what he's going to be able to do. He's an all-pro. If Zach Ertz takes that step back, like GP was talking about, then I just don't even know that he's productive and you're putting him on the field. And the other part about this, too, is if we're going off a majority of the season, tell me how you felt about Zach Ertz for a majority of the season. If you were to say, through week 14 ahead of the bye week, how many people would say they wanted Zach Ertz to be back next year? There weren't many. I think Zach Ertz truthers would have said it, and maybe a few would have felt like he was giving them exceptional value. His playoff run and last couple weeks really boosted his value. Not to say that that doesn't mean anything, but a majority of the season he was, I wouldn't say expendable because he was their security blanket, but say you bring in a receiver next year to be the number two. Maybe you were to sign another tight end or something. To me, he's easier to replace than a guy like Bobby Wagner. And that's not even including the fact that I think Bobby Wagner is maybe the leader of that locker room, even though he's only there for a year. Him working with Jaden, the importance of that relationship, I think it's one thing where I can live with that for one more year. Even if you say it's a little more than you'd like to spend, I can live with giving him, you know, I think as Joel Corey was on with Beamish and Finley earlier today, he said the floor is probably around $10 million. If I have to give him $11 or $12 million, I can live with that for a year. I understand he's not my long-term answer at middle linebacker, but I can live with that for another year where he helps Jaden one more year, you know, that little brother, big brother relationship that they have. He helps out the defense, helps continuing to establish the commander way that they're talking about. I wouldn't mind bringing him back for one more season. I think I would bring both of them back, depending upon the price tag. You know, Linnell did a good job of crunching those numbers, putting them together. You end up with about $20 million cap hit for those two guys. Is that worth it? I don't know. I don't know that you're going to get $20 million worth of production out of those guys. Is it worth it in terms of leadership and helping this team continue to grow? Maybe. But I think that is an interesting discussion to have. But if I had to choose one or the other, it'd probably be Wagner. And I think it kind of spells out here on the on this list that he's 41st out of the top 101 players, according to Pro Football Focus. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I want to take a look at sports memorabilia. What's the best sports memorabilia you have, or what's something that you wish you could get your hands on? We'll take a look at some of the most expensive of all time. The reason I bring this up is A.J. Brown has something in his house that's pretty cool after the Super Bowl victory. We'll talk about it next here on The Fan. Welcome back. It is Overtime on The Fan. Toby Altizer with you until 10 o'clock. You want to hop in, 800-636-1067. You can also tweet at me, at Toby_Altizer. So, I want to get some of your phone calls on this. What is the best piece of sports memorabilia that you have, or what's a piece that you wish you could get your hands on? Because the reason I bring this up, so I saw this tweet from, this is from Sam Stafford. Not exactly sure who she's with, but AJ Brown's girlfriend. So I guess she works with NBC Sports Philadelphia. So AJ Brown's girlfriend posted a picture of AJ Brown having a life-size mannequin in his house with his unwashed Super Bowl uniform on it. So you know how like they'll have the mannequin, sometimes you watch these videos and they have them kind of like displaying the uniform and everything. He's essentially got one of those in his house with the mouthpiece and everything dangling from it, everything from the Super Bowl in his house. So he essentially got himself in his house, right? How cool is that?
That's awesome.
Like, I think that is about as cool a piece of sports memorabilia, if you're a player, that you could have. Like, I know a lot of these guys, I'm envious because I'm a jersey collector. I'm envious when some of these guys will show you, like, tours of their house, and they'll go into their jersey room, and they've got jerseys from just who's who of everybody that's big time in their sport, and sometimes even outside their sport. But how cool would it be if you walk into your man cave, and right there, you've got your entire uniform from winning the Super Bowl.
That's great. Did they wash it?
No, it's unwashed.
Unwashed.
It's unwashed. Now, apparently, they're spraying a lot of Febreze on it to make sure that it doesn't stink up the place. Maybe you have to air it out a little bit.
But you have to keep it in mint condition.
Sure.
you know what I mean.
Maybe you have to fumigate it somehow. But no, you can't wash that thing. Now, the only difference here is, you know, they were wearing their green jerseys, and they were playing on turf. If they were playing outdoors and you had a little more grass stains on this thing, it'd be a little bit better. You know, they got the white pants. There's a couple of marks on them. It looks like maybe a little bit of blood, maybe a little bit of some of those rubber pellets on there. But for the most part, it's pretty clean. Almost looks like it hasn't been used. I'm sure there's a nice little smell to go with it that it has been used. But my question to you is, coming off of this, what's the coolest piece of sports memorabilia that you own, or what is a piece of sports memorabilia that you want to get your hands on that you haven't been able to do yet? So, Vic, I'll give you the chance first, because I know you have some pretty cool sports memorabilia. What's the coolest thing that you currently have in sports memorabilia?
I'll just give you my appetizer first. I have the 1998 Washington Capitals team-signed jersey. It's the white Screaming Eagle jersey, and it's just... the entire team has their signatures on it. So I have that all, like, you know, perfectly placed on the wall.
Nice.
So that is my number one seed, or was my number one seed until about 5 years ago when the Nationals won the World Series. I actually got a World Series ring from the team. Like the legit World Series.
That's incredible.
Ring with my name on it, Ferreira. And... well, that is my number one seed.
To be fair, I do remember you coming in and pitching a really good sixth inning that one time.
I did. Yeah. I really hit that commercial break well. I hit the music bed well. I like to think I had a big part in winning the World Series in 2019.
Absolutely you did. One of the best in the biz at running the old Nationals broadcast, Slick Vic Ferreira. So he deserves a World Series ring. That's pretty good. Pretty good.
There's nothing I really right is there. Never going to top that, having a championship ring. It can only go downhill the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, that's the ultimate win right there. Because I have a Nationals World Series ring. It costs about $30. Like, you know, like it's a cool one. It's replicating the Nats World Series ring. It's got Strasburg. It's not the real thing. Mm-hmm. Yours is the real thing, personalized to you. Very, very cool. Very, very cool.
And I'm always grateful and thankful for the Nats organization for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'd be thrilled to get something like that. I have my best piece of sports memorabilia. So I have two, okay? Two signed jerseys. So I'll start with the one that isn't as relevant. No, I'll start with the one that's relevant to here. I have Terry McLaurin. I have a Terry McLaurin signed jersey. And now here's the thing that I think is interesting here, Vic. When I didn't feel this way until this happened. When I went to Lambeau, I went to go watch, because I was still living in Wisconsin at the time, I went to go watch the then Redskins. I think this actually might have been when they were the football team. The football team play the Packers. And if you know anything about Lambeau, their visitor tunnel is so small. I don't even think that two players in pads that aren't, you know, tiny running backs, Darren Sproles style, could walk shoulder to shoulder out the tunnel at the same time. Like, it's that narrow. And so if you want to go get an autograph or high-five a player or do something like that, Lambeau is an excellent place to do it if you're going to get there as soon as the gates open and go hang out. So I'd been there once before to watch a Redskins and Packers game. A little bit familiar with the place. So this time I went and I wanted to go get a signature from somebody. And it's ironic because the team was so poor that I was like, I only want Terry to sign it. I'm wearing a Terry jersey. I don't want anyone else to sign it because it's kind of pointless, but I want Terry to sign it. And sure enough, Terry McLaurin signed it. And after that, I said, I will get signed stuff, but it's only if they're signing it for me. Like, it doesn't have to say to me, but it needs to be, I saw them sign it. Even if I'm like going to, like, my buddy, there's a sports cards place out in Wisconsin that he took, we went to, and I'm trying to remember who it was. It might have been, it was a wide receiver, or maybe it was Jordan Love. I can't remember. Someone was signing autographs, and so he paid to be in the line and got an something signed. I think that's acceptable. Obviously, that's fine. But like saying, dude, I've got a Jaden Daniels signed jersey. I paid $6,000 for it off Fanatics.
Yeah.
I don't know that I like that as much. That one doesn't necessarily feel like it counts as much to me. So that's one of my favorites because it's obviously one of my favorite players in the area. But the coolest one that I own, Vic, and I need to get it framed. So this is one of the coolest things I've ever gotten to do in my career. I don't even know that I can top it. And it was one of the first things I got to do in the first couple years in the industry. So I worked alongside Leroy Butler, who played safety for the Green Bay Packers back when the Brett Favre was there. He won a Super Bowl with them, and he's the originator of the Lambeau Leap. He's the first guy to do that. But he's a great safety, just went into the Hall of Fame a couple of years ago. I can't remember exactly what year it was, but he'd just gone into the Hall of Fame. And so I was giving him a hard time saying, Leroy, dude, I got hundreds of jerseys. I'm not going to wear a Packers jersey because I'm not a Packers fan. Unless it's a 36 Leroy Butler jersey. And so I was just given a hard time, and he's out by his vehicle, and he tosses me a jersey and says, here, just take this one. And sure enough, I look down, and it's Leroy Butler, signed by Leroy, Hall of Fame, I think it was 2022. A signed jersey with the Hall of Fame inscription? I don't know that you can top that. I don't know that you can top that. And it's on top of someone that, you know, I've had a personal relationship with, a really, really cool guy. Had an opportunity. One of the coolest things I've gotten to do in my career was filling in on the show that he does in weekdays before, you know, he moved on from doing radio. He would host from 10 to 2, and I was filling in because of some circumstances at the station, and it was his first day back from going into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And I got to host one-on-one with him and just asking him questions about his experience at the Hall of Fame. So that was really, really cool. So those would be my top two that I own. Those would be the ones that I have that I think are super cool sports memorabilia. But I'm curious for you guys, 800-636-1067, what is some of the sports memorabilia that you have in your possession that is the coolest stuff that you can think of, or something that you really, really want? Because seeing what A.J. Brown has in his house, where he's got the full mannequin with the full get-up from the Super Bowl, I don't know that you can beat that. In the man cave, your jersey, like, that's super cool. If you could have any sports memorabilia in the world, what would it be? Or what is the coolest piece of sports memorabilia that you own? 800-636-1067. You can also tweet at me, at Toby_Altizer. We'll get to some of your phone calls next here on The Fan. Welcome back. Overtime on the Fan. Toby Altizer with you till 10 o'clock. Feel free to chime in, 800-636-1067. You can also tweet at me, at Toby_Altizer. A.J. Brown won the Super Bowl with the Eagles this past season, obviously, just about 2 weeks ago. And saw a tweet that in his man cave now, he's got a full mannequin set up with his Super Bowl uniform on it. Everything. Cleats, socks, the tights he was wearing, the pants and the jersey and the helmet, even with the mouthpiece hanging down from it. It looks like A.J. Brown, just not A.J. Brown. Doesn't have the full pads, but that's such a cool piece of memorabilia to have. What's the coolest piece of sports memorabilia that you own or a piece of memorabilia that you would love to get your hands on? 800-636-1067. MGM National Harbor listener lines are open. Let's get out to Ben in Rockville. Ben, what's going on?
All right, this will probably going to beat A.J. Brown. My dad, back in the day, used to give this baseball and politics speech in front of these guys in Cooperstown, and so we did all these Hall of Famers. And for my 21st birthday, not only did Duke Snyder get me blissfully drunk on my 21st birthday, which is a hilarious story, but there are all these other Hall of Famers that were there, including there's so many good guys, including this one guy with his craziest mustache in the world with played with the Athletics. Guy's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So they all got me drunk. It wasn't even hilarious, but we have all these baseball autographs from all these Hall of Famers. It is ridiculous. The entire room is filled with baseball autographs. And then also, even better, is when I had a near-fatal car accident, traumatic brain injury, and I've got this one autograph from Eli Manning's father on letterhead, Archie Manning letterhead, saying, "Ben, I hope you get better, recover." And with it came an actual autograph from Eli Manning, 100% real, from when he made the throw following the crazy throw with him making the throw, and an autograph, 100% authentic from Eli Manning.
Wow.
So it's like an entire room filled with sports memorabilia. I really wish I had Twitter. If I knew your Twitter, I would honestly tweet it at you because it's just insane. The entire room is just nuts.
Well, do you have Twitter? You have Twitter?
I do. Twitter, but I can tell you, I have or X, whatever you want to call it, but it's at Rising Red Storm. If you want to tweet me, I can tweet you all the stuff, but it is insanity. This entire room is filled with autographs. I mean, I have literally a Duke Snyder ball, and all these balls, we have tons of balls signed by Hall of Famers, guys from the African-American leagues. I've got, like, it's insanity. We got all these balls signed. I don't know how many Hall of Famer balls we have signed, but it's nuts. And the Archie Manning letter, it is the coolest thing you'll ever see. And then directed towards me, which is so nice. And then we actually have this one autograph by this former Spider-Man author for Marvel Comics. And he used to do these photos for these. He did this one thing by this one. The guy was the catcher for Gary Carter, the backup catcher for Gary Carter during that Mets World Series win. And he did an actual, like, a photo of him talking about his history from having all these sports health issues. And he actually did this drawing, and it's of the player, but also signed by this guy. I can't remember his name, but he's this very famous Spider-Man author and writer. And
that's really
not
cool.
Not only writer, but also drawer. It's amazing.
Well, Ben, appreciate it, man. I shot you a follow on Twitter, so maybe shoot me a DM with the pictures of that stuff. That'd be really cool to see. So
I'll tweet it out publicly to you. There's so much cool stuff. It is insanity. I can't believe we have this room. It's a Hall of Fame baseball room. It is nuts.
That's
definitely. It's just Rising Red Storm, and it is. I'll definitely get you all the stuff. You will. It's sort of a mind bender once you see the source. It's like, holy cow.
No doubt.
You'd love it. It is a sports room of sports rooms.
All right, Ben, I'm going to let you go. Appreciate it, man. It's at Toby_Altizer if you want to tag me on Twitter. Appreciate it. That's a heck of a room. Duke Snyder hanging. Those are some good stories. Those are some good stories. Let's get out to PJ in Reston. PJ, what's going on, man?
Hey, happy Friday, everybody. So, I like the previous caller's call. I think Archie Manning's story is cool. Archie Manning's like a really, really good guy. I like the Manning brothers, but Archie Manning just strikes me as like a really devoted, awesome father.
Mm-hmm.
So I got a lot of respect for that guy. But, yeah, so for me, first of all, I probably had a lot of expensive memorabilia in terms of like baseball cards and like football cards when I was a kid. But I was like, I think I even had Jerry Rice's 85 rookie card maybe. But what I used to do as a weird kid is I would like line up all the football cards, like 11 on 11. Like when I was 7, 8 years old,
yeah.
Memorize all the stats and play like play like a, almost like a, you know, like a football game with them, right? So my cards are all like in bad shape, but I got good ones. Now, the ones that mean, you know, so much to me, Art Monk's one of my favorite athletes of all time, and I went to his football camp, and I had this like Art Monk character thing drawn where it's like I'm wearing Art Monk's jersey, but it's like my face, like where you go to a mall and they, you know, they somebody draws you, and
yeah.
He signed that. And I went to football camp like 3 times, and that just means a lot to me. Art Monk, people got to meet Art Monk. He's a different guy. This guy is like a famous athlete. This guy is like so shy and kind. He was doing push-ups with Monty Coleman on his back. I was like, that's impressive. Another one that means so much to me is somebody sent me from Iran, the Iranian soccer team's jersey. The reason why that means so much to me is because they're maligned on both sides. A lot of the Iranian people are upset at them for playing and not boycotting because of the women's rights issues. The government also came down on them for, because some of the players are outspoken for women's rights, like supporting, you know, the women's rights in Iran. And it's very emotional. So for me, I respect that so much. And they're so maligned by so many people,
sure,
on both sides. And these guys are just young guys that just really wanted to elevate women's rights. And if you look at the game, last World Cup, Iran and USA, the end of the game is so emotional. All like Anthony Robbins comforting the Iranian guys, hugging them. You know, the governments don't get along, right? But the players, the people, we're all one blood. And, you know, I'll not to be like, well.
No, sure.
I guess if I wanted, I remember really I wanted to have, edit this out if it's not radio friendly, but I would not mind to have like Anna Kournikova's tennis shorts. But edit that out if that's too, you know, risky.
That's a little bit wild,
anyway,
but PJ, appreciate it, dude. That's a little bit crazy. Let's get out to Dave in Maryland. Dave, what's going on?
Hey, not much. So I'll try to be quick. So about 8 years ago, I took my two sons to Cooperstown for a summer trip. Long story short, I was going through a divorce, trying to save money. Walk into a memorabilia shop. First ball I see is my favorite player from growing up, Bo Jackson. So I buy this Bo Jackson ball. Didn't want to buy it at first. They talked me into it. Several years later, I've spent thousands of dollars on balls. So the Bo Jackson ball for me, but the best one I think I would ever, the greatest thing I'd ever like to get my hands on would be a baseball signed by the 5 inaugural or original first members into the Baseball Hall of Fame. So Ty Cobb, Walter Johnson, Christy Mathewson, Babe Ruth, and Honus Wagner. Apparently those balls exist.
Yeah, I was going to say, does that exist? If it exists, I can't even imagine how much that would be worth.
Yeah, there are a few of them out there. They're obviously impossible to get your hands on, but those would be treasures. So
that would be insane. If you could get your hands on that, I'd love to see that. Dave, appreciate the phone call, man.
Yeah, no problem. Bye.
Yeah, those are interesting. Those are cool. I think it's cool when you get different people that value things differently. Obviously, someone that you really admired as a kid or someone that you really looked up to as a player, like an Art Monk, that's cool. Someone like Bo Jackson or someone that you really, really like. Some of the things that I wish I could get my hands on, I'll give you that in just a second because I want to get out to Mike in St. Mary's County. Mike, what's going on?
Hi, how are you doing, boss?
Doing great, Mike.
So the piece of memorabilia I have, I'm a big Redskins fan. I have a old John Riggins signature that my mom got. She used to work at the hat check room and on Andrews Air Force Base. And John Riggins came in one day and she got his autograph, but he kind of signed it as like he's like hitting on my mom. So it says, "To Lisa, let me Lisa piece John Riggins." So I have that still.
Well, I'm guessing so, that's a one of one.
That's a one of one, and I had it. My mom's like, I got his autograph, and she gave it to me when I was like 15, 16, and I looked at it, and I was like, Mom, he's trying to put the moves on you.
That's so hilarious.
Yeah,
and sounds like Riggo. So I mean, that fully fits,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she used to meet all the players. You know, back in the day, it was like the Bullets. This was like, you know, early 80s, so they would always come in. But
in DC, Jack, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going? I just wanted to quickly share, it's a little bittersweet now, but I have what might be the last jersey that Soto signed as a National. We played the Mets, I believe, the night before he got traded. I had to go see the game because he was really my favorite player, you know. And he was the last player to leave the stadium. I mean, it was like 2 hours after the game. There was only about a dozen of us left. But he you know, was driving out of the stadium. He was really kind of looking very depressed and sad, but he made sure to sign every fan's autograph, and it kind of it sent a message that like he really cared about us fans, and you know it just what could have been, but it's a good memory to have, you know.
Yeah, Jack, appreciate the phone call. He's going to be like Saquon to me in a lot of ways because he's going to be remembered as now it seems like a New York Met for a long time. There's no way I can ever root against Juan Soto. You just can't. He's so likable. He was ours. He helped us win the World Series. Can never root against him. But, man, it's going to be tough when that dude is wearing opposing colors for the next, I don't know, 10-plus years. That's going to be tough to watch. But he's so likable, so I'm not going to be able to root against him. We'll keep this conversation going. If you want to hop in, 800-636-1067. Also want to take a look at some of the most expensive sports memorabilia of all time. We'll take some guesses on what it is and how much it costs to sell those things, because that's crazy, some of the numbers you'll see on some of these things. But what's the best sports memorabilia that you have or something you wish you could get your hands on? 800-636-1067. We'll keep talking about it next here on The Fan.